While our Earth human races break down into a variety of types, some even form distinct groups because their features, physiology are widely disparate, to the point of producing true aberrations, all the beings of this unknown world are uniform, standardized types. Even at a mature age, these beings do not develop flabby limbs or the obesity very typical of the human race. Therefore, what gives them superior in appearance is the remarkably regular conformation of their limbs. They all move around with ease and elegance, executing concomitant movements without exhibiting any stiffness of the spine. Their physiques are generally around 2 meters tall, although somewhat rounded and straight, reveal harmony and give them a sober, even dignified attitude. Even considering the fact that they walk around undressed, their posture, far from being fearful and evil, as Camus alludes to when narrating the giant Adamaster, is correct, and let's face it, without intending to offend human modesty, more superior. Later, when I visited a hospital, one of the doctors told me that the body of those inhabitants is made up of 3 vital organs, the heart, the stomach intestinal pouch and the circulatory system. Chapter 5, The City That Dazzles. The streets are laid out in perfect lines, leveled with absolute precision, have heavy traffic, but no one moves around underground, the interior of which is reserved for the safekeeping and transit of vehicles. They are numerous, they are true avenues intersected by other avenues at a regular symmetrical distance of 1 kilometer. The streets vary in length from 300 to 350 kilometers. The outskirts of the city are an ellipse, surrounded by a wide strip, similar to the 40-meter pavements mentioned above. Logically, 4 large areas are formed, in a sense 4 cardinal points. This is because the houses follow the avenues up to a certain point and the avenues extend into the neighborhood, according to the needs of each one. These areas are not equal in size, they differ considerably. For example, those to the north and south are much larger than those to the east and west, because the avenues extend more in one direction, while their transverse streets are shorter. As you can see, the constitution of the periphery contributes greatly to the formation of 2 border areas that are much larger than the opposite ones. This is why on opposite sides, larger zones are established, while at the other 2 ends there are smaller areas, since it is precisely in this direction the avenues reach a length of around 300 kilometers, thereby extending into the next neighborhood. All the activities of the inhabitants of this world takes place in these areas, which we'll call zones, where everything that the people own is located, with the exception of their homes. So let's say, if Zone 1 is home to hospitals, sanatoriums and everything related to public hygiene and public health, in Zone 2, there are schools, universities and everything related to education, including sports facilities, such as stadiums and exercise fields, etc. In contrast, Zone 3 is home to factories, experimental laboratories generating magnetic forces, the workshops of flying discs and their respective experimentation fields, while in Zone 4, agricultural work is carried out, fruit growing, with its extraction plants and other establishments that process and manufacture food intended for consumption. Along the pavements, in front of and to the side of each of the houses, a column about 8 inches in diameter is fixed to the ground, from which passers-by take a tube in the shape of a half moon. This tube has a camera and microphone, like the ones in our radios, while at the other end there is a prominent, luminous disc-shaped video screen by which they identify the person being called. They take this tube from any of the columns and with which they can transmit any messages they want. This is, of course, a video phone device used by the people who have this convenience at any point along the avenues. Inside these columns, obviously, there must be suitable devices that provide them with means of communicating at a distance, in which case they always focus on the person being called and, at the same time, are focused on by that person. The heavy traffic is due solely to public transport. The vehicles move at an unbelievable speed, up to 1,500 km per hour. These transport vehicles resemble a stack of record discs. They are topped by a dome and measure around 10 meters in diameter and 5 meters in height. They are semi-transparent throughout, whether on the ceiling, floor or circular walls. Inside, there are numerous round stools for individual use which are located all around the inner periphery and, in the center, there is a large communal table, also round enough to sit on. In the center is a large communal table, also round, large enough to seat about 20 people. These vehicles are automatic and there is no driver in charge. They are activated by the passengers themselves who move them, as only happens with the lifts in certain buildings, which do not need a lift attendant. On the door, in the shape of a full arch, there is a button that the passenger presses as they enter, causing the vehicle to move at great speed. In contrast, on the other side of the door, another button causes it to stop. No one is concerned with the movement of the vehicle, except the passenger who wants to get on or off. Its door is wide and they either enter or leave, invariably taking into account the respective sides, which becomes compulsory due to the passenger's duty, when getting off, to activate an external device to allow the vehicle to continue its journey. Although the vehicle moves very quickly, everything goes smoothly, without jolts, without passengers being thrown together, as happens in our big cities on public transport. I believe they have solved and overcome the law of inertia. I couldn't work out how they could do that. There is little to choose between each of the streets, as they have same width and the same traffic density. Although they are not guided or driven and travel at speed, the vehicles, when they cross the streets, they are never in danger of a collision, because there is an infallible system that intervenes, causing one of the cars to slow down, allowing the other to pass. Imagine the majestic panorama presented by the intersection of two avenues 180 meters wide, planned under exquisite symmetry, free of protrusions, smooth as fine porcelain, and add to this the fact that the vehicles traveled swiftly, silently and with mathematical precision to get some idea of the scene I witnessed. I leave it up to you, kind reader, to evaluate what I was magnificently able to witness. Your own ideas and imagination surpass any description I've given. The pavements connect at the corners to form a perfect curve, and it was at one of these angles that I stood to observe both avenues, grandiose, perfectly stylized. We headed off in a new direction and continued along this perpendicular avenue. Then I noticed the same succession of houses that I had seen on the previous avenue, where I had started my walk in this dazzling and mysterious city. Their houses were built at the same height and measured some 80 meters from wall to wall and were invariably a dozen meters apart. Flower beds stretched from the front to the back. The interesting detail was that there were no steps. I later learnt that there wasn't a single one in the entire city structure. The pavements built at the level of the doorways and the inside of the houses, of course, excluded this requirement. Another impressive feature was the elimination of any sharp angles involved during the manufacture of any appliance or utensil I saw. There isn't even a 90-degree angle in the shape of these objects, and during my stay, I was able to verify the truth of this fact. The avenues are dominated by an endless succession of flower beds, interspersed with wide passageways through which we passed, always listening to superlative music that didn't disturb the prevailing silence. In order to give the reader a pale idea of what this special music was, let's suppose, if, while watching a silent film, we heard the chords of a well-played piano, but this background music does not vary with the various scenes in the film. Similarly, this strange, incessant melody did not in any way interfere with normal activity, just as the piano music has nothing to do with the events in the film. And so there is this perennial melody coming from space, sometimes low and unison, changing in continuous chords with successive echoes that were reproduced and finally extinguished, harmonious. We were continuing our walk when my guide stopped and said to me, "It seems to me that you're finding a big difference between what you usually know on your planet, isn't that right?" I'm really surprised, Between what I see here and what we actually have in our cities, there is a profound and basic difference. However, I don't know where I am and I don't even know your name. I know what your name is. As for me, my name is Janzel. I'm a doctor and an ordinary citizen of this community. At that moment, truncating his reply, he pointed to the edge of the avenue, drawing my attention. Look! He said, pointing with his finger. I turned in that direction and saw a small disc approaching us. It landed squarely on the pavement, he bade me get into it, and we crossed the avenue. He tried to explain something to me, which I'll try to describe. In the center of the avenues, there are platforms on which flying discs land. There are two types, small ones exclusively to cross the avenues, and larger ones available to fulfill more urgent tasks. Possibly to carry out special services or tasks relating to the normal life of the community, because they only travel within the atmosphere of the planet itself. Spaced out on the pavements of the avenues are semicircular, horseshoe-shaped indentations used as parking places for the smaller discs that cross the streets. They measure about 4 meters from edge to edge and in them the craft, when stationary, juxtaposes perfectly. It's a kind of boat. In fact, anyone wishing to cross any street will have to use these little 2-meter radius flying discs. These little discs are a kind of mediator, I said. They serve as mediators, because they are always in the middle and just right for use. We don't usually call our flying discs as terrestrials do with their different types of aeroplanes. They all come from the same place and they only differ in their intended purpose. The little flyers that we'll call the mediator are entirely transparent. It's as if they were huge glass cones, with nothing inside. The mediator is driven by an unknown force and flies from the platform on which it is parked to the anchorage of the avenue, landing, always close to the call point. To call it, it is enough to depress the upper outer button of columns that also serve as a repository for the called video phones. Once inside, at the command of a special device, it crosses in a straight line, landing gently on the other side of the road. To dispense with it, simply press the button and it lands peacefully on the platform it came from, clearing the pavement. The mediator's main power and control emanate from underground laboratories or workshops located at the convergence of the avenues, as Dr. Janzel explained to me. This control system keeps the mediator's entry level in exact correspondence with the height of the pavements, which greatly facilitates progress and offers maximum comfort. As there are no private vehicles, they are all public, so nobody pays for the transport, which is provided free of charge by the community. The craft are powered by a magnetic force, coming from a central source and are propelled by it to the right height, because they respond to the electronic remote controls. A curious fact was witnessing the mediator interrupt its march for a few seconds. Standing completely still in the air as one of the larger long-distance craft approached. After this one had passed, he continued on his way, settling down in his own reserved spot. At the intersection of the avenues, the long-distance traffic lights are used to synchronize vehicle speed in line with that of approaching vehicles, thus avoiding any collision. You can clearly see the preponderance of an unknown and invisible force that directs, controls and propels them so perfectly, enabling traffic to pass without any danger. Possibly a highly refined system of unknown forces emanating from powerful apparatuses, whose sensitivity far exceeds that of our electronic devices. We had already walked a short distance, when Dr. Janzel sent me the following invitation. I'm going to show you one of our houses. I know you're looking forward to it. It would give me great satisfaction to see the inside of one of these houses, I said, solicitously. After this dialogue, Dr. Janzel led me towards a nearby residence, taking me to see all the rooms. Chapter 6, Inside a Residence. I was in for a real surprise when I entered that residence, the surprise of simplicity. I had never known such simplicity. It was devoid of any clutter, truly Spartan. For me, It was a disappointment not to find a variety of different items and equipment inside, in short, something strange that would constitute an unexpected novelty. I thought I was going to have the chance to see something original, some useful object for domestic use, but I was truly disappointed. There was nothing remarkable, nothing worthy of special mention. The imposing residence, except for the layout of the rooms which, contrary to our method of construction, form a wing around the building without communicating with its interior, was composed of a single room. Contrary to our habits, the residences are devoid of furniture, ornaments or decorations of any style, as well as the complex machinery we use for our comfort. The complete absence of windows, doors, chandeliers, cupboards and the endless division of rooms that is so peculiar to our homes greatly simplifies the lives of its inhabitants. I based this on the fact that among them there is no vanity or pride so ingrained in the human species. Residences are practically made up of only two distinct parts, one inside and the other outside. The inside is made up of a single room large enough to accommodate about 500 people, with a vast circular table in the center with its respective stools. Its slightly concave floor, which is more pronounced around the walls, from where successive stools emanate, interspersed with little tables, also round. At the top, around the entire circumference of the room, there is a shelf where they place food containers, recognized by the color of the contents. The other part is made up of a series of adjoining rooms, arranged on the outside of the building, with access to the gardens, without, however, communication with the interior of the house. The rooms are large and furnished in the center, by a large round bed covered in a material like foam rubber, more consistent than ours. A circular pillow follows the same shape as the bed, protruding from one end of the large mattress all the way round, a curious arrangement. Thus, they sleep in round beds according to the habit of the Paraguayan hinterland, but they don't use blankets or anything like that. The layout inside the room allows them to get together on festive days to chat, and they do so comfortably, enjoying a wide view of the environment. With the food containers on the shelves within easy reach, they use the little tables and stools to accommodate themselves and entertain conversation in all directions, while at the same time ingesting vitamins as a way reminiscent of our villages. There is no struggle to prepare food and, consequently, no waste is released, and there is no rubbish. The environmental conditions, free from dust-free and wind-free environmental conditions, and other factors that contribute to keeping homes clean at all times. This environmental prophylaxis eliminates the possibility of micro-organic life, thus preventing deterioration. Ipso facto, they dispense with the precautions necessary for the preservation of food, which remains unaltered in their jars. The houses don't need kitchens because the food is produced in its own place, Zone 4, referred to later, from where it is taken to the public depots, which I will talk about in due course. They also do without a toilet, because their inhabitants don't expel excrement. They don't exude toxins, as we do, because of the scientific and controlled diet free of impurities, dust and other contaminants. They don't need baths or the complicated and costly installations that are so useful in our homes. At the entrance to each home, the front door, you'll find two devices identical to the video phone machines I've seen on the side of the avenues. On each side of the door is a set consisting of this apparatus, plus a small table with its stool for the person to sit on. Many of them eat their meals on these sets, while chatting with friends and relatives, but always with their gaze fixed on the screen of the video phone. According to Dr. Janzel's explanations, after a day's work interspersed with worship and sports, the residents go back to their homes. Such a day corresponds to an average of 250 hours in our time. In the evening, they take a leisurely stroll, in a pleasant, always festive atmosphere of permanent mutual respect. Never do the members of the community harbor sentimental thoughts or show spite, malice or even engender inferior thoughts. Even in the smallest aspect of life, They tried to activate their minds, to achieve an exquisite harmony that ensures their undefeatable well-being, in harmony with the beneficial vibrations they receive from on high. As Dr. Jansel told me, equality prevails in society and justice therefore reigns. The reason why discontent, rebellion, revolution and ideological movements arise to bring about a change of direction in government is because what affects, above all, the internal economy of nations is inequality. Inequality generates injustice. It's not about the equality proclaimed by certain political creeds, but the paradox of those who make a profit at the expense of their fellow human beings, demanding the high price of general sacrifice, with the annihilation of many precious lives. This is what causes suffering and creates social upheaval. But all are equal before the Creator. Dr. Jansel concluded, "It is the practice of love that you lack back on Earth." Returning to his explanation of the common life of the inhabitants, he continued to discourse, more or less along these lines. "Nightfall lasts an average of 12 hours of your time and we take the opportunity to rest, walk around and exchange ideas in long, fruitful conversations. The weather here is always mild, being an eternal spring, as there is only one season in the entire planet. We are aware of the continuous atmospheric changes taking place on planet Earth. The temperature is always stable during the day. When it does change slightly, it is counterbalanced by the ubiquitous lighting that also maintains an even temperature. That's why our people don't feel cold or hot, even though they're always naked. They are long past the stage of complicated clothing and illusions fueled by Earthlings. In their transparent houses, in love and devotion, they sublimely create new life through their children, or to put it in other words, they form their children through a natural and spontaneous process, by means of a deep and loving gaze that culminates in a caressing kiss, a true germinative kiss. As they don't have genetic organs, the woman is given a gestation sac and a small incision to allow the birth of the child, which takes place without the usual sacrifices, afflictions and incidents common to our humanity. At that moment, I realized that the subject was somewhat delicate for my Earthman prejudices, and asked, what do women do if there are no housework? In response to my inquiry, Dr. Jansel told me, women, because they have no direct obligations, that is they have no house to clean and tidy, no crockery and clothes to wash, or even to prepare food for those closest to them, they first occupy themselves with their studies. They attend primary and elementary school until the age of 25, when they are still considered girls, and after that they enter a theoretical apprenticeship course for all the work that is required to be done, on an equal footing with men. Later, when they dedicate themselves to more advanced studies and subsequently they strengthen and purify their minds so that they can pass on the same teachings to their children. However, a large part of their time is devoted to sports, where they are well orientated to become strong and able to give birth to robust children, in the essential sequence of perpetuating and perfecting the race. Admiring the spontaneity with which these revelations were made to me by my interlocutor with extreme sympathy, and seeking to take the conversation in a new direction, I asked about the beauty of the flowers, whose colors impressed me so much. Dr. Jansel explained, "First of all, I must emphasize that all the inhabitants of the community feel an unusual love, a deep respect, almost sacred respect, for flowers. For us," added the doctor, "flowers represent the synthesis of the most beautiful plants that God has given this corner of the universe. So, in our leisure time, we spend a long time contemplating a flower, just as you do when you watch the performance of a play or contemplate the artistic performance of a great symphony. The beginnings of our childhood include the solemn planting of a flower that becomes the child's entertainment for the day. The care and affection with which they cultivate it is as if it were a father's affection that was sparking their feelings of deep love. Flowers last for 180 to 220 years and are, in fact, of unrivaled beauty and superb appearance. When they fade, they are undoubtedly a source of sadness for those who planted them, as well as for those who follow their development. Interrupting him at an opportune moment, I said, "The night is illuminated, as you told me, however, I don't see anything that can provide light for the inhabitants." "Yes, there is lighting, and it's very intense," replied Dr. Jansel. Trying to enlighten me, he told me that really, we don't have wires and poles or other similar means of transmitting electric power, nor do we have spotlights for isolated projections of light, because we have another means of projecting light. Long ago we abandoned this flawed and complicated system still in use on your planet. We have already overcome this problem of lighting by electricity, which is so popular with Earthlings, because as well as being costly, it continually poses serious dangers and has claimed countless victims due to the complexity of its maintenance, which demonstrates its inadequacy. This method, which is inoperable for us, is nonetheless extremely useful to the people of the Earth, because in the age of electricity, it provides them with invaluable services, providing them with a greater scientific field for progress and the realization of better discoveries, directing them towards the utilization of nuclear and magnetic energy. There are, however, all around the city projectors called fuchsias. These devices, as I saw later, are light-colored, with protruding friezes, placed vertically and have the exact shape of our sugar bowls. They have the function of launching into the air strong jets of gases, which ignite producing a bright light which curves to establish a large dome, as if it was a huge circus tent. The curving jets of gas merge at a height of approximately 100 meters with those which are projected from the opposite side, producing the light. The light penetrates the homes through their transparent walls and domes, and then the city is abundantly illuminated, also moderating the temperature balance at night. Such lighting is a general adornment, offering a magnificent spectacle, like a carpet of mats of cotton flakes, and its density diffuses uniform light that doesn't affect the sleep of the inhabitants. As the light passes through the walls and domes, it undergoes refraction determined by its composition through the external material of the dwellings, offering its inhabitants a mild light that is very favorable to their rest, thus providing them with a peaceful and invigorating sleep. This is how we manage to obtain real phosphorescent clouds that spread and diffuse widely, without fail, leaving everything illuminated until daybreak. Discussing this new subject, Dr. Jansel pointed out that the inhabitants of the city live in the same place. Jansel said that in order to live, the inhabitants don't do without the fruits of the trees, which produce the vitamin juices indispensable for the fundamental basis of general diet. He then referred to the duty of everyone to work in the countryside, serving and laboring as any farmer, a condition arising from the need for repeated visits close to nature in order to capture new energy. Therefore, at the time of the transfer, the laborer works in the countryside, like the settler in industry. In fact, in general, the laborer is a scientist, doctor or engineer. They take it in turns to carry out their duties in order to better familiarize themselves with the fundamental basis of life on the planet. In their own way, these sectors are summarized in religion, medicine, science, engineering. Each of these has its own primary function. Thus, religion provides them with mental hygiene, medicine, physical hygiene, engineering, material and plant production, as well as the formation of human groupings, science, greater for the realization of ideals. There are no nations there, no different skin colors. The concept of nations and national boundaries naturally inculcates separatism and division. Logically, this causes stagnant progress, culture, customs and cuisine. If this were to happen on this particular planet, it would cause an irremediable exodus of the population to other cities or more advanced countries. To summarize, in the strange world I visited, the prevailing norm is as follows: what one has, all have. The inhabitants of that planet seek the good of the community, never seeking for themselves what cannot be given to others. If I do a thing to benefit myself alone, a second person does a good thing for himself alone, a third person does it in succession, we will soon have, In conclusion, a benefit dispersed in favor of each person individually. On the other hand, if these beneficial things are applied to the community, each person receives three benefits at the same time. This procedure is part of our philosophy, and it's interesting, equitable and humane, leading us to the fulfillment of the law, love one another.